Hi, I'm Brian Jacobs, and welcome to Team Around the Table. Today we're going to be talking with Kate Potasek, who is an award-winning researcher, who is an expert in setting up collaborative win-win business relationships. She's going to be talking a lot about her recent article in the Harvard Business Review about establishing trust in contracts. So Kate, can you just describe a little bit about your research and what Vested is?
Well, I tell people I have the coolest job on the planet because I get to study the art, science, and practice of how to make these strategic deals work. And at the end of the day, that's what people want. They want their business relationships to be healthy, to be successful, to perform, and to reach their goals. And so as a researcher, I look in and see, why do some of these deals work and why don't some of them work? And how can I make them work?
I remember in 2010 when I read your first book, Vested Outsourcing. I think that was the first one. And it was game-changing for me because outsourcing was this topic that not a lot of people talked about, and it was kind of unknown. Can you talk a little bit about how you came to be being an author and an expert on procurement and strategic deals?
You know, it's a fantastic question. I live in the Seattle area. And I got a call from the Associate Dean for Graduate and Executive Education, and the university is very well known in supply chain.
So you live in Seattle, but you work for the University of Tennessee.
Yes, I know that sounds weird. I was remote before it was cool, pre-COVID.
Right.
I've been a professor there since 2003, and the Associate Dean called and said, Kate, I've got this project you may want to work on, and we don't have any professors that want to work on it. And your name keeps coming up. And I said, well, tell me about it. And he said, well, the government has all these strategic deals. So think about engine maintenance, right? So they have a $10 billion engine maintenance contract with the Navy in Jacksonville. Why is that deal so successful? But yet the same similar type of deal with GE and Tinker Air Force Base, not so good. What's up? It's kind of the same thing.
Right.
And so that began a research project that lasted between 2003 and 2009.
So you were studying behavior with both buyers and service providers on what makes contracts successful or what makes them fail.
Absolutely. And what we found is there's five key things. It's really that simple. First, it starts with outcomes. We aren't really thinking about the business outcome we want. Mm-hmm. We aren't thinking that relationship that we have is a relationship. And so we have to make the shift from transactional ways of working to a relational outcome-based type of work.
Okay.
We call that a vested business model because I'm vested in your success.
Okay.
So that's rule one. Rule two is focus on the what, not the how. I like to think of this as the outsourcing paradox. We outsource to the expert and then tell them how to do the work.
Right.
It's crazy, right? So we need to resist that urge. So rule number three, clearly defined and measurable desired outcomes. I remember looking in our research and we were looking at a facilities management deal. And I am not kidding, Brian. This contract, it was 800 pages and had 550 metrics. I know it's insane.
Yeah.
But how do we actually get out of that measurement minutia and really start to measure what we're trying to achieve?
Yeah.
Business outcomes. Now, the fourth rule is money. And this one's the hard one. So instead of having transactional money, I pay you per unit, per person, per hour, per shipment, per mile. I get a commission on the transaction. We create a pricing model with incentives that optimize the parties to work together to solve the business outcomes. Think of it as grow the pie, share the pie. We win together, we lose together. And then the fifth rule is around governance. So I use rule 1 to 4 to craft the agreement, the vested agreement.
Okay.
I use rule 5, insight versus oversight, governance, to manage the relationship.
Okay. And that seems counterintuitive to the way a lot of buyers, you know, think they need to manage suppliers, right? You know, the insight versus oversight.
Yes, absolutely. Well, actually, all of the rules, people say, well, it's a paradigm shift.
Right.
Because we are so ingrained into transactional ways of working. That's what we've done for decades.
Right. So a lot of your research and a lot of your literature talks about game theory and applying it to, you know, big contracts. Can you just kind of explain for people listening kind of what that means and what the key idea is behind that?
Yeah, so game theory, if you boil it down to a simple, in its simplest form, you have two decisions. You can command or you can cooperate. The prisoner's dilemma. And so mathematically and statistically, game theorists have studied and proven that when we consciously choose to cooperate, we actually outperform when I compete. So why am I competing against you? Why am I playing against you? Let's collaborate and beat the market.
Right.
Because when we do that, we can create value. When we create value, we can share value.
So Vested, you talk a lot about having the right relationship between service provider and buyer to get those business outcomes over a long period of time. You know, these strategic deals that you've studied are multi-year, very large contracts. What are the things that enable those contracts to be successful?
Well, you have to choose to trust.
Okay.
So trust is essential. We know this, you know, Stephen Covey's book, The Speed of Trust.
Right.
Lots of Nobel Prize winning research has been done on trust. And so we often don't realize that the behaviors that we do undermine trust. Think about negotiations and the tactics that we have when we negotiate.
Right.
You know, good cop, bad cop, stonewalling, the best alternative to a negotiating agreement, right? You withhold your BATNA. I'm not going to share with you my walk away. You might take advantage of me, but transparency is a beautiful thing.
Right.
And so choosing to trust, choosing to be transparent, allows us to look at these relationships and optimize for the business outcomes instead of just buying and selling.
So Kate, you have an article in the Harvard Business Review about trust. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I'd love to. It's actually something that I've been collaborating on with David Friedlinger, a Swedish attorney, and Oliver Hart, a Nobel Prize winning economist out of Harvard University. Well, the article that's in the HBR special edition on trust is called A New Approach to Contracts.
Okay.
And it puts forth this concept of a formal relational contract.
Okay.
And so many times, you know, we have this contract, but we say strategic partner, we say we want a relationship, but then we turn around and our contract doesn't say that. It's very transactional.
Right. They're written by lawyers, and lawyers' jobs are to find problems.
Exactly.
And to manage the worst case scenario.
That's right. And so, for example, let's take risk. And we talked about transparency.
Right.
So I want to know those risks. Let's put them all in the center of the table. Let's be as transparent as we can. And now let's allocate the risk. Which ones are best for you to take? Which ones are best for me to take? Which ones are uncontrollable?
Right.
Which ones should we insure for? What can we insure for? What can we govern for? So if I know all of those risks and I have a joint risk register as part of our insight governance, Rule 5.
What's a risk register? Talk about that.
Risk register, a joint risk register.
Okay.
A joint risk register is when we look at all of the risks that we have and we use it as a tool. Let's think of it as a simple Excel spreadsheet. But now we're going to work together to try to mitigate those risks, because risk mitigation is a form of value creation.
Right. That's right. And so you mitigate the risk, you create value. When we set up Cushman, when we came together about a decade ago, we intentionally wanted to build our outsourcing business around doing things that weren't necessarily being done in the market. And we built a lot about transparency into how we talk to our clients about how we make money and built that in. Your literature talks about transparency as a foundational key to building trust, right?
Absolutely. It's essential, actually. So I use this analogy of playing poker. Let's pretend you've got some cards and I've got some cards. So you've got your poker hand and I've got my poker hand. Why am I playing against you? Shouldn't I show you my hand and you show me your hand, because together we have a better hand.
Right.
And so if we could pick the best cards out of your deck, out of your hand, and the best ones out of my hand, now the goal is to beat the market.
Right.
So we're beating the market, not beating up on the supplier. And this is really the essence of what we teach at Vested, is to optimize for the business outcomes, okay, not just to buy a transaction.
So Kate, we've used the Vested compatibility and trust assessment with some of our larger clients. Can you talk a little bit about what that is and how that works?
Yeah, so the compatibility and trust assessment, we call it the CAT assessment, is an anonymous survey where team members from both parties answer a bunch of questions. And so people are asked the same question from two angles. So for example, innovation. You know, everybody wants innovation.
Right.
Well, how innovative are you? You know, I'm really innovative. And so then I get to ask, well, how's my partner? Well, they're not very innovative. Right. And so we always tend to think that ourselves are better than our partner. And so you start to see these perception gaps, and people don't understand that they aren't communicating at the heart of what they're doing. So we look at these perception gaps, how big they are. We put a score to it. So you get a little benchmark of how trusting your relationship is. And there's five dimensions of compatibility and trust. So performing to promise, so raw trust, do you do what you say? Innovation and managing change, because we live in a dynamic world, and so we have to embrace change. Teaming, how well we work together, how well we communicate and are open and transparent in those communications. And so we look at these dimensions and we look at the perception gaps and you get a score. And what's really fascinating is that there's an aha moment. It's like, we're both pretty good, but we don't appreciate what the other party is doing. And we do a bunch of data on this that's kind of eye-opening. But one of my favorites is a really simple thing that we do at the very end of the survey. And we ask everyone that takes the survey to come up with three adjectives to describe the relationship. And I'll give an example that we have actually from the HBR article with Island Health and their doctors. Toxic, distrustful, opaque. And once people realize that maybe the problem isn't always the other guy,
right,
they also have something to do with that. It opens the door for a different kind of discussion. And what we find is that once people can put a number to trust and they can see the gaps and where they have these disconnects, they can now start to work on them. And that's really cool to see these turnaround just from a simple survey, how we can improve trust in our relationships.
Because trust and transparency enables the value creation, you know, in these strategic deals, right?
Absolutely. I would say it's the foundation, but the rules that I talked about, the best of five rules, actually enable the value creation.
So one of the things, you talk a lot about listening and clear communication, you know, in both governing the deal, you know, in the governance. Can you talk a little bit about what your research has shown and how that works?
You know, our natural tendency in our research shows that buyers tend to be a bit aggressive. And so you, dear service provider, you didn't do a good job.
Right.
And we don't slow down and do the root cause analysis to think maybe, just maybe, there was an input to the supplier that had an issue. Microsoft did this as in one of our case studies. 50% of all of the supplier issues actually came from an input issue on the buyer side.
Interesting.
Arizona State's done some deep dive research in this particular industry. I think it was something like 93%. It's construction. 93% of all issues that a supplier has stem from something upstream. So we're not looking at the end-to-end supply chain. Not jump to conclusions, it's your fault.
Right.
Now, if buyers are aggressive, suppliers' natural tendency is to be passive aggressive.
Right.
They beat me up, right? Well, I don't like that. And so I may just leave your account.
Right.
You're not a fun account to be on. And you wonder why the A team turns into the B team or the C team. it's not that the supplier is necessarily bad. It's that your account has a reputation of not being fun to work with.
Right. You can't attract talent to a bad account.
Exactly.
You know, as a service provider, you can't get people, that your top talent won't go work for a bad client.
Exactly. And think about this, how this links to flexibility, right? Because we live in a dynamic world. And so if I've created a rigid contract and I've put you in a box to do what is in the box, but then we ask you to think outside of the box, or COVID hits, or we have a new issue, or, you know, some new strategy change, we have to look at flexibility.
Right.
So a vested agreement, a formal relational contract, is a flexible contract framework.
How can service providers enable the paradigm shift?
So service providers who value transparency is a key pillar. Not all right. service providers like transparency. You have to have a supplier that's capable.
Right.
And I think if you do your due diligence, you'll find that there's lots of capable suppliers.
Right.
The difference is that cultural fit, the willingness to be transparent and have that open, transparent communication, the willingness to be flexible, embrace change, innovate.
Right.
Right. The willingness to work in a team environment.
Okay.
Right. So to be highly collaborative. And so cultural fit is important, and the compatibility and trust assessment helps us measure that cultural fit and to see, one, do I have cultural fit? And if I do have cultural fit, why do I have perception gaps?
So what do buyers need to do differently?
The buyers need to educate themselves on the various types of sourcing business models, that a transaction-based model isn't always the right fit. We know how to do a transaction. We need to learn how to deliver on business outcomes in a dynamic world. And so, that's contracting a new economy.
So how does the real estate and facility management industry measure up?
Well, I would say the facilities management side is definitely getting there. The real estate side, haven't cracked that nut yet. And actually, maybe y'all will be the first one.
Yeah.
But think about it. What do you call the real estate side? A transaction.
Right. It's a deal.
It's a deal. And the economics, how do we pay for those transactions? You know, very much commission per transaction. We have to break that model. And so I think the only way we're going to solve that is by working together in a highly collaborative, transparent partnership way to address how we're going to optimize managing the glut of inventory.
Because you might have the wrong incentives. The business model might not be rewarding the behavior that's necessary.
Absolutely.
To solve the problem.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They do not buy and measure and pay for outcomes.
Interesting. Yeah. And so paying for outcomes, how do you make money on an outcome? Isn't that squishy and soft?
So that's rule four, which is a pricing model with incentives that optimize for the business outcomes. And so the first thing you have to do is actually go back to rule one, which is define your outcomes.
Right.
But there are some tenets or principles, design principles of how we look at the pricing model. One is transparency. Two is linking the incentives to the business outcome. So instead of having the profit be in the transaction, we're going to break that. We're going to have the cost is the cost is the cost. So I have to cover the cost, but the profit of the service provider is going to be linked to the business outcome.
So the service provider makes money when they create value rather than they get paid for just activity.
Absolutely. And that's where we get the term vested from.
One of the things I've heard you talk about which I've always liked. You told the story about the rats in Vietnam and as an example of perverse incentives.
Yeah, so the rat example is a great one. So when the French government took over Hanoi, the city was dirty, yucky, had lots of rats. And so the French, being the French, said, I want to clean this city up. So they created a bounty. So if any citizen brought in a dead rat, they would get a bonus.
Right.
Well, people are smart, and they began to breed rats, kill them, and bring them in. Our world is full of these perverse incentives that we don't realize that we have.
Yeah.
And so part of what we do when we help people rethink or, you know, make this paradigm shift is to look at how they make money and look at where they're going and see that connection that the money isn't aligned to the end goal. Yeah.
So what are the red flags when it comes to compatibility and trust between service providers and buyers?
Yes. So I would go back and first challenge the buyer, which sourcing business model are you using?
Okay.
Are you really buying a commodity? Then behaviors don't really matter.
Right.
But as you shift up and you need flexibility, you want to mitigate risk, you want transformation, innovation, problem solving, then cultural fit becomes very, very important. If I'm like to be transparent and you don't, it's going to be a mismatch. If I like change and innovation and you don't, it's going to be a mismatch.
What about arrogance?
Oh, absolutely. Moving away from selling to solutioning.
Okay.
You're not actively listening and communicating if you're selling.
Right.
You know, shut up and listen to my problem.
Yeah.
So we can solution the best way.
Right.
Versus you come in and like, here's the perfect way.
Right. And you haven't listened or diagnosed the problem. What's new today that has changed since you started the work?
Oh, gosh. You know, I like to think of it as, you know, this little, like, think about vested in the five roles being my hand or being the head of a starfish, the body of a starfish. And so the starfish just keeps growing little legs and it gets stronger and stronger. So, for example, the compatibility and trust assessment is an offshoot of how do we measure trust.
Okay.
One of the areas that's an offshoot is what we call a request for partner process. So the Canadian government came to us and said, you know, I really like the idea of vested, but by law in certain areas, we can't justify a sole source. And so we worked with them and developed what we now call request for partner process. Today we have, you know, 7 books and I'm working on an 8th. Ironically, you know, my 8th book is going to be published by the American Bar Association and it's on conflict prevention. And how, when we think about our contracts and the clauses and the terms that we use and how we go about that, you know, setting up our governance, we are all about the dispute and managing the dispute versus preventing the dispute. And there's so much we could do up front that we're not doing.
Okay. So as we wrap up, when you look kind of to the future, what changes do you see? What things are on the horizon in this space?
Gosh, I just see all of the art of the possible. When we first came out with a book in 2010, I gave a speech at the Council of Supply Chain Management Professionals. And I remember someone coming up to me and they patted me on the shoulder, said, nice theory, it'll never work.
Right.
Business doesn't work that way. And I was just like, but this came from studying deals that worked. I know it can. So that put me on a mission to educate people of the art of the possible. And so today we have over 100 organizations that have done vested deals. Y'all have been applying the compatibility and trust assessment. It's changed the way you said you talked about how you're much more transparent and trying to push the transparency front. And so I look at all the positive change and the case studies that we have, organizations that are now going public saying, you know what, I made the shift and here's the results.
Yeah.
And that is super cool because that's how we cross the chasm with new things is we see that others have entered into the land of the art of the possible.
Right.
So facilities management now is starting to cross over.
Right.
I have hope that the real estate side will make the leap.
So this has been a lot of fun. I love talking about vested outsourcing and your work. So thank you, Kate, for spending the time with us today and talking about this.
Oh, pleasure.
And thank you for joining Team Around the Table.